Hello everyone, this is another special from Gothcon, the Swedish role-playing game convention that I went to in March. This one is a panel I led at the convention where myself and my fellow panelists talk about the state of RPG criticism in 2024 and how we go about reviewing role-playing games. I hope you enjoy it.
Good morning, everyone. I am Ian McAllister from the Giant Brain and Brainwaves podcast. And today we're going to talk about sort of the state of RPG criticism in 2024, how we go about reviewing RPGs, ethical considerations, that kind of thing. I'll let my fellow panelists introduce themselves and the sort of podcast and sites they're from, starting with Andreas.
Hi, I'm Andreas Lundström. I am from the Sweden Rolls podcast, and I'm very happy to be here.
Hi, my name is Hjalmar Norden. I'm from the Red Moon Roleplaying Podcast. Also excited to be here today.
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Raz. I have a background of working in the industry. I worked for Wizards of the Coast for 7 years, and now I'm one of the core members that organizes Germany's biggest roleplaying convention.
Cool.
My name is Michael Eriksson, and I created Rollspelsdags and Aventyrna Rollspelspod, two Swedish talking actual roleplay podcasts.
Okay, fantastic. So one of the reasons I want to talk about this kind of thing is that the barrier to entry to like creating RPGs has basically never been lower. You can put together your PDF, your zine, whatever, stick out on DriveThruRPG, you're done. It can go basically worldwide. You can go viral overnight. It's very, very easy to put out products now. So the role of sort of criticism and filtering has become more important as we go on. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is like sort of what we expect from like an RPG review, what sort of aspects in it. For me, I always talk about like the sort of feel of games. Although we talk about mechanisms and settings and themes, obviously, in games, I like to talk about how those things come across, how they make people feel around the table. And what do each of our panelists feel should be like the sort of the core of an RPG review? What should come out in that piece of writing or video or whatever it is?
Well, my first thought is that there's a plethora of role playing games out now, and everything comes out by the day. So
yeah.
I feel like the core sort of thing is like, okay, what's the crowd? What's the age group? And yeah. What kind of role player is this for? Because there's so many ways that we like to pursue this hobby.
Yeah, who's it going to appeal to? That kind of thing. Yeah, anyone else got a thought on that?
I was thinking about you know, every RPG creator, even though there are a plethora and thousands of games, every RPG creator has an idea of like, well, my game's special.
Of course.
Because, and then there's hopefully some kind of USP. And so that has to be at the very core of the review as well, I think. Like, what's unique for this game? What's the USP?
What sets it out from other games?
Exactly. What's the thing with this RPG?
I think it's quite kind of hard to answer that question because it entirely depends on the target audience of that criticism. You know, for instance, I think personally, I am looking for a story. I think a story at the heart of RPGs, for me, that's important. Character development opportunities, world building opportunities, and things like that. And but that's not the core issue for everyone. And depending on your audience, there are different things that become important, I think.
Yeah, that's true enough. For yourself?
I have the attention span of a goldfish. It usually goes to that pretty pictures of the selling point when it comes to role-playing games, because that is the first thing that you see when...
The third thing that draws you in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that is really the thing that pulls me in, and then I sort of create it from there. It's a really poor decision to have me on this panel because I'm really not very good at following the rules of anything.
Yeah, but, so we've got...
No, like, but I agree with you. That's a thing that draws many people in. And I'm writing an RPG, a setting and an adventure at the moment.
Sure.
And our illustrator and I, we have many discussions about the illustrations because he feels like an illustration can be there just because it's cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like an audience will want to know, well, what is this? What am I looking at? So people can have very different like approaches of when you pick up an RPG for the first time and you open it, different things speak to you. Mm. And many people are like you, like you open, you would just want to be drawn into the story by the images.
Yes.
So some high resolution images of an like
Yeah.
During, if it's a video review,
yeah,
I think it's important to have some really nice like zoom-ins of the illustrations.
Yeah, so that sort of production aspect is definitely something we can talk about in reviews, because like some RPG books can be almost incomprehensible in terms of their layout. Many moons ago, I reviewed the Star Trek Adventures RPG when it first came out, and the first edition of that book is, by most people's sort of reckoning, quite bad. Like, it's laid out quite poorly, and that kind of aspect, the sort of production aspect and how it looks and how it's like, is it nice to read? Those things are important, because like, can you actually get through this book in order to run it, is actually quite an important aspect. But yeah, we were talking about like your different audiences as well. So yeah, it is important as critics to know who's coming to you for your reviews, like, because I was going to talk about this a little later on, but basically bias is impossible to avoid. There's this idea in tabletop criticism in general and criticism wider that there's this mythical sort of like unbiased person out there that can review anything with absolutely no bias and no prejudice. And that is basically impossible. And I think it's good to be open about your biases a little bit as well.
Yeah, I like that. When you, as a reviewer, you present like, I really like games that do this and this and this and that, and maybe that's why I don't like this particular thing.
Yeah.
This might speak to people who like this and that. It's not my preference, but they do this in a good way for people who enjoy that kind of gaming.
Yeah, yeah. You can speak to like an audience that's outside your purview for sure.
Yeah. And sometimes, just on that note, I really appreciate it when you say like, okay, is the game system flexible? Can it appeal to someone? Let's say someone who is a bit more freeform. Is this a very rules crunchy game, for example? Yeah. Could it still be made use of in a different way? Because some of them follow things so, exactly.
See, I'm not sure like the role of a critic is to like, I like to like run RPGs that I'm reviewing as close as possible to as written,
right?
Pretty much. So I'm not sure it's the role of a critic to like sort of like say, you could adapt this to do other things. But has anyone else got thoughts on that? I personally like to run it as is and then be able to say, here's this product that has been presented to me. Here's how that plays, as far as I can tell from what's written. What does everyone else think about that? Should like that net be thrown wider? Should the critic sort of like say, oh, but you could use it for this. It's maybe not great for what it's intended, but you could use it for something else.
I have a quote from Torben Sarenstam from a Gothcon interview a few years back when he said that considering homebrewing different stuff when you play an RPG, and he said like, as an RPG creator, I preferred if you at least test rules as written first.
Yeah.
Like, at least try it, because we have this mechanic in there for a reason. We've been place testing this for years, so we have the mechanics in place for a reason.
Yeah.
So at least try it the way it's intended first, and then homebrew away. Like, do whatever you want with it. The important thing is for you to enjoy it at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're just doing that for yourself, and you're not like writing up or putting out your opinion in the world, have at it, you know, do what you want.
All right, but that said, I also think that I could make a case for different reviewers having different styles of reviews, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And because the audience also need to find the reviewers that fit with them,
of course.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're the type of person who does not want to follow the rules from the beginning, right? If you say, hey, I love this concept and stuff, and there's some things that I like to pick out and use in my game, and you find a reviewer who just does that without running them things first as they are meant to be, maybe that's your reviewer. You know, I'm a little extreme now in this, because I also think in most cases it makes sense to try things out first. But, you know, there are different people with different preferences, and it's great that we have different styles of reviewing, different approaches, and you need to find the people that fit with what you are looking for.
I'm sure this exists already, but this almost like brings inspiration to have sort of a reviewer channel where we like call something like the rule breaker reviewer that is just taking down the world and what's in it and just use that or whatever. But then you're not reviewing the game, then you're reviewing the world of the game.
I mean, you could have that in a review for sure. You could like say like, okay, the game as written doesn't run very well, but there's an interesting setting and theme here certainly that could be used or could be inspiration for something else for yourself, Mika.
I am very much just going with the feeling of the game.
Yeah,
and leaning somewhat to the basics of the rules set. Of course, I'm using most of the time the same rules that is set into the game, but I very much do not like to read the rules and want to create a story instead. And if I take away some of the rolling and it becomes a good story and everyone has fun, it still is a win. I completely understand that some people appreciate the rules and want to play according to the rules. And then you should not play with me. Simply as that.
Do you find like sort of more like critical reviews that like do go through the system like as written and sort of show that off? Do you find those useful to sort of guide you as to what games you might be interested in?
Because I am very well known. I know that about myself, that I cannot review rules myself because I don't have that analytic mind.
Sure.
But sometimes some rules just stick. And they've been tested by other people who are good with measuring if the rules are good or not. And in this case, most of the cases, they are right. But I always dumb it down to make it more streamlined in a storytelling mode.
Yeah, what Andreas was saying about sort of homebrewing and not like homebrewing things and then writing about your homebrew as the criticism. I had a friend who was part of the Doctor Who role-playing game Cubicle 7 playtest group when that was first coming out. And in the Discord for that, or wherever it was at the time, I don't think Discord was around, they had people who were getting the playtest document, homebrewing their own rules, and then feeding back on their own homebrew.
This could be in the game.
And they were like, and the Cubicle 7 were like, I don't think you understand your job.
This is a review of my version of the game.
The game in my head is this, and you've done a very bad job of it.
Well, I could agree. Like, if I'm watching a review and they haven't actually played the game at all by the rules, then I will have to look at another review with someone who has actually played it by the rules to say, like, okay, the rules work like this, and I like this and that about them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've got a little quote here I'd like to go over before we go on to our next little bit. This is from it's from a blog I'm not going to name. It was under an article titled "A Survey of Rules Light Superhero RPGs," and basically a sort of listicle kind of thing. But partway down, he says this: "Before I start discussing these superhero RPGs in earnest, I need to clarify a few things. I haven't played literally any of these games. I also can't afford to buy the rulebooks for all of them for the sake of the piece, and I wouldn't have had the time to read all of them even if I did. These impressions are based on product descriptions, reviews, forum posts, podcasts, videos, and rarely rulebooks if I can access them." That's terrible.
So essentially collating other people's opinions?
Yeah, basically a review of reviews.
Least honest, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's honest, that's true. Like, you know what he's saying at least. But that, I found like a lot of, certainly in the UK, we have a few sort of relatively popular reviewers who are basically doing a read through of like, especially like core rule books when they come out. And then saying like, I think this plays like this, and here's what that's like. How do you guys feel about that sort of review where someone's just read it and not even like attempted to like bring it to a table and players and experience the game?
I think that's quite common, actually.
Yeah.
And most reviews I've watched on, I don't read many reviews on like blogs and stuff, but I watch some YouTube reviewers, and a lot of them are just like, here's this RPG. And then they start flipping through the book and like, and then we have this, and then we have that, and then we have, oh, this is nice. And it's very clear that they haven't read it like from front to back.
It's more like an unboxing of the
art. It's more like an unboxing than a review, actually.
Yeah.
I think that's quite common. I don't know what about you guys, but many, many people I've watched do reviews do that, exactly that.
Yeah. Okay, but you need to remember that reviewing a game is extremely time consuming.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. If you play that's hours and hours, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you prepare your notes on it and stuff like that. So if you do a good job of reviewing something, that takes forever. And these are not professionals, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. what we have here in the world of role-playing games is actually everything in the review community, as far as I know, is fan-based. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mostly, yeah, for sure.
I don't know if you know, I can't think of a single one, maybe you can, but who's not fan-based, but just professional in this. But that means it's really investment of your own time, you know, to do this. And so how much time are you really willing to invest, especially if you do several reviews, right? Or if you have to redo a review every week or something like that.
It's very
I think those who do that are people who maybe aren't primarily reviewers. They are YouTubers. So yeah. They are professional YouTubers. And as part of their YouTube channel, they sometimes review games.
Yeah.
And those are the most in-depth reviews I've seen.
Yeah. I mean,
they have actually plowed into the game and put in the time.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, if you're going to call something a review, if you're going to, like, say, this is a review of this game, then you've kind of committed to putting that time in. If you just want to go through a book and say, like, here's sort of my first impressions of reading through this, that's fine. And that content exists out there, certainly, and almost goes towards sort of marketing rather than like criticism.
I'd like to almost draw a parallel to tech reviews, sure. where you often do a first look kind of thing, hands on. And if you put on a first look at and stuff like that, then you're like, okay, so this is probably not going to be played.
Yeah.
And then they'll have a kind of daily driver or a 2 weeks later or a 1 month later kind of thing where we actually played it. So I think in that case, it needs to be very made clear that, oh, wow, we just looked at this. But then if it's a big investment, like some of the games do cost quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure.
And so on, especially if you tend to hoard them up. Then you're like, okay, so then you might sit and wait for the one that has like, okay, our group played this and this is what we thought kind of.
Yeah, because like I mean, I say on my site, like I've got like sort of review policies on the site, and I say we do review RPGs, but basically they're the ones I pick up. So there's obviously a little bit of bias there because they're the ones that sort of interest me and I like generally buy for myself. I don't think I've ever been given an RPG for review by anyone. No, not like I can recall.
But I don't think you're against the idea of asking other people of their opinions about the product. But if you're going to have a blog going back to the case in this particular instance, I mean, the person have done no research at all, or just taking other people's opinions, haven't bought the books, haven't read the book, haven't looked at a PDF or anything. What are you doing it for then? Like, it has no commitment.
Yeah,
the only thing you did was summarize other people's opinions, which seems like a sloppy job if you have a blog about doing reviews.
Yeah, it's basically like I could Google what you have written down pretty much, and I don't really need that filter on there at all. Yeah, it's an interesting one. So with like, obviously, like RPGs are split over sort of core rule books and then like adventures and supplements and kind of thing. Do we think there's a difference, like with adventures and supplements, do you think there's like as much a need to like have those in play? There's a little bit less of a need, I think. You could maybe get away with more of that sort of first impressions kind of stuff with supplements when you're like bringing those out. What do you guys think about that?
I like the pictures.
You like the pictures?
No, but they're good. They're inspirational, but most of the time I make stuff for myself. But they are nice to have supplements, extra books. But I rarely buy extra books. I usually go very well with the first core book in many of the cases. And then internet is a beautiful thing when it comes to creating extra things. You can get inspiration from just Googling other things. But if you want to make an item or characters and stuff. So I never really felt like the extra books is very important.
Sure.
But they are nice that they exist.
Yeah, and I don't know what really makes an extra book at some point, because sometimes they're like, but we realized that the system was a bit broken in these areas. For example, if you make an extra book about magic and something, you're like, oh, we realized that if we're now going to do all these add-ons for this particular factor of the game, we need to change up these things to make it balanced with what the other books offer.
Okay.
And in that case, I mean, now, for example, I'm just thinking of the Warhammer fantasy role-playing game, because I was suddenly deciding to play Wizard and added the Winds of Magic add-on there. So I was like, okay, suddenly they've changed a bit of how channeling works and things like that.
Right.
And then
so
I feel like
fundamentally changed something.
Yes,
about
exactly.
The system. Yeah.
Then I feel like then you might need a little bit more in depth. If it's more about, okay, here are some new monsters, here are some new areas or another side of the world, then I feel like it's more a flavorful approach.
Yeah, for sure.
Agreed. But I think what's pretty cool is adventures, because they save you a lot of time. Yeah. And well-written adventures have a deep storyline and things, and you know, things that would take you forever to do yourself. You know, if you have something where you have character development, where you have surprising twists and turns and stuff like that. And Those are pretty cool, I think.
For me, it's actually the opposite. It takes me a lot more time to read through an adventure than to write it myself.
Yeah,
okay. much longer, because that's why I almost never play written adventures, because I have this huge fear of, like, if I just miss one detail, and that's going to come back and bite me in the ass later on, because I missed that little detail. And it takes a lot of time to, like, study an RPG adventure as opposed to writing one yourself, which is based on the characters. But I think, going back to the actual question you had for when you're reviewing adventures and supplements as opposed to a core rulebook with mechanics, of course, if you're reviewing a core rulebook, you have to go through the mechanics. You have to have read it more thoroughly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you're going to review an adventure, well, you can't really, you know, talk very much about what's in it, because you're going to spoil it.
You don't want spoilers.
Yeah. Or you can have a spoiler section, like, okay, don't read this or don't watch this between minute X and Y.
Yeah.
When you're reviewing an adventure, it's much more like the feel of it. Like, what's the? I like the story because this is about forbidden love, or this is about, you know, whatever.
Well, the themes are story altering characters.
And you can draw like comparisons to stories that everyone knows about as well. Like, I feel this has a feel of Game of Thrones to it, or this feels like a Superman movie, or this feels like a...
Yeah, mentioning sort of cultural touchstones is very useful for, like, sort of like talking about that kind of thing.
But if you're reviewing a monster book, then of course, then you want to see the coolest monsters. So you want to see what they can do, and you want to see how to fight them and stuff like that.
Yeah, those are sort of like monster manuals, that kind of thing. They're more inspirational, so you can talk of those without, like, maybe using them as much in games. You can go through it and say, like, this is... These things are cool, or there's lots of lovely pictures, or like there's inspirational things in there. Now, Halimer mentioned a very sticky word there, balance. Now, balance is a really sort of tricky subject in sort of tabletop criticism in general, and one that is obsessed over, certainly in board games. In RPGs, it's even trickier, I think. How do you guys sort of see the idea of sort of balance in RPGs? I have my own thoughts, but I'll wait till the end.
Sorry, balancing what?
Sort of like that feel of, like, sort of fairness in games, and like whether, like, the system feels unfair in some way towards certain classes, or however that system is set up. Like, I'll go first. Like, for me around the table, like, the sort of idea of balance is more about that feeling of sort of fairness around the table. Everyone sort of has their little niche. Like, we talk about sort of niche protection sometimes in RPGs, where certain classes can do certain things and the other classes can't do that. So that player has their spotlight moments, has their time around the table. And, like, certain players get really obsessed with it, especially in the sort of more like mechanical RPGs, like Dungeons and Dragons, that kind of thing. There's always this talk of, like, balance between classes and, like, what's more powerful and that kind of thing. And it's certainly what a lot of the playtest documents that you see come out as we approach 6th edition or 1D&D or whatever on earth it's going to be called later in the year. Like, so how do you guys see sort of balance and fairness in sort of RPGs? How do you want that to be talked about during criticism?
Well, I mean, it should be mentioned, like, this is a game that requires balance. It's important because it's balance is a huge part of the game.
Yeah.
Because you're all going to be doing stuff that needs to be balanced. But certain games are so story-based that you don't need to have balance at all. Just touch on that. I don't feel it's super important, but maybe if it's important, touch on it.
Yeah. Briefly.
I think it really depends on how the game plays, and the word fair is kind of difficult, I would say, because you know, what is really fair, and does a game need to be fair? You know, is it fair if the player characters are stronger than comparable non-player characters or something like that? And maybe that's the essence of the game, and that's why it's fun. And is it fair that this guy is better in combat than this guy, this player character? Maybe that's the essence of the game, and it's fun that way. So it always depends on the game. So I think we can't discuss that in general, I would say. It's more like, you know, does the game play play well? Is it fun for everyone? Yeah. You know, is like, is it fair in the sense of, does everyone have the same level of fun? That is maybe the essence here, not the balance of the character necessarily, unless the game requires that to have fun. You know, if a game lets you do way more because your character has way more abilities and you are taking over 60% of game time, then that is, you know, critical, and then we have a real balance issue. I feel like
it's, when it comes to review of a game, like the game as a core, here's a game that has come out, I feel like that might be touched upon a little bit, but balance in itself is more something that I feel like almost goes in a separate thing. You know, I would make a separate video about balance in this particular game. You were mentioning Dungeons and Dragons, for example, and it's really hard with a tabletop RPG. Because then you have your play testing and stuff like that. But as compared to a video game, we're like, oh yeah, now we did this balance patch and this balance patch, and we realized that this class needed this and this class needed that. But now everything needs to come out from the start. And I feel like a lot of players, they want to feel capable when they play. It's like this feeling of satisfaction where you get to solve something as part of a team, and oh, this one can do that one, and this character can do another thing, and you feel like, okay, we all moved forward. Sometimes I don't agree with that. I if everyone is bad, then I really enjoy that as well. Like in a game where we all kind of mess up, but we are.
I mean, you're talking about Warhammer fans earlier. I mean, y'all start out as like rat catchers and postmen, and then you're like, oh, look, chaos. Like,
I also had that in Merkborg, actually, where I felt like we were all kind of misfits that we weren't succeeding much with anything, but we had a great story. Yeah. So I think in that case, I mean, maybe if it's one person that always succeed and the other is like, look, it's this one again. Like, but if it's like everyone, all classes are good except this one that is cool, but actually doesn't really measure up, then that will be a problem. But I don't know if that could be even touched upon in a review.
For yourself, Mika, because I know you're not a massive rules follower, so is balance kind of important to you, like that concept of a sort of balance and fairness?
Well, it depends on the group, I think, very much. Because some people want to play a half monk, tabaxi cat woman who has three different classes because that is the mid-max. That the best way you can get 10 attacks into a game. And those people are just not the kind I play with. I respect them because they do exist and they want to. And for them, that kind of mechanical balance is important because you shouldn't be able to do this and that. But some people live to find the most efficient way to make a character.
Builds. That was really like icky feeling when I just said, see, builds. Okay, this is how you need to build your character. Because it takes all the personality away from what you're playing.
I mean, it's also this idea of the GM being the character's biggest fan, and allowing every character to shine. As long as a game master does that, then it's, for me, then that's balance. Not, you know, stats, this and that, but if every character gets a chance to shine, then the game master's done a good job.
Let's sort of like talk about that a little bit, because like one of the things I found in sort of certainly mainstream RPGs, and like going to go back to the sort of D&D here again, like there's a surprising lack of advice on like how to play D&D within the books themselves. If you just picked up those books and had no idea what they are and just had your little role-playing game description at the front, the amount of like what you do as a player, I think, is about a paragraph in like within those three books. Do you think that like RPG writers and critics to a degree should talk about like how those games should be implemented at the table, like how the book advises? Like one of my favorites, Blades in the Dark, like has a good couple of chapters about this. Like, here's your GM responsibilities, here's your player responsibilities, and those are things you can share with the players to say like, here's how the game wants you to play. Do you think there should be like more of that in RPGs to help guide players and games masters to the vision of the designer?
I always think it's great if you, in the book, encourages the kind of sit down before and around the game, like encourage the discussion in the group that players and GM, like, okay, so what? How do we want this? Like, what are we all expecting from this kind of game?
Yeah,
I love seeing that when you. We play a lot of Cult Divinity Lost, and there is something called the Horror Pact in that.
Okay,
they want you to sit down and talk about, yeah, and that comes into almost consent, but also things that, what are you okay with in a game?
Sure.
You know, the these kind of things. And yeah, me personally, I love seeing that encouraged in books, because it's very easy to feel a pressure of a game needs to be this or this, or you know, around the table, if you're new or if you're experienced, you will always hope for something and some kind of experience. And sometimes you're like, I hope I'm doing the right thing, because I'm not sure what the other people around the table expects of me. I hope they thought that was cool, what I just did.
Yeah, session zeros are like a good idea generally. As real. For the rest of the panel, do you think like RPG books, especially core books, should contain more about like sort of like how this game should be played?
Absolutely. I think you identified the big weakness of D&D there. Definitely.
Yeah.
We are actually, I'm also running an association that is active mostly in Europe, but on an international level, which actually gets RPGs into the hands of young people. You know, we have a lot, we're working with a lot of new people, and RPGs in general are doing a terrible job of addressing new people and teaching them how to play. And that's why everyone always says, you know, find someone who plays, and that's how you learn RPGs.
Yeah.
So I think it would be fantastic if role-playing games did a lot more to get people or to the level of a good player. And of course, good player is, you know, different thing for everyone, but at least there are some basics we can definitely agree on. And
agreed.
You know, the essence of role playing, actually, of becoming your character, you know, to, you know, imagining yourself as the character and really getting into that and stuff like that. And I think there could be a lot that helps you do that, because that is not an easy step for someone who has never played before, right? Yeah. And so I think you're definitely onto something. I think it's not well done in D&D at all. There are some role-playing systems that are way better for this. But even there, I think there's a lot of room for improvement, definitely. This has been an issue that I've had for many, many years.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to all those who make new role-playing games, you know, consider that. That could be an entire booklet, you know, where you have maybe 24 pages of taking people into the world of role-playing and giving them some hints or some exercises they can do that are very simple and take them to the level where they can enjoy the game more, because it's really about enjoyment. You know, it's giving them more, letting them have more fun with the game.
I think it depends on the game. I think the more crunchier games and the more advanced games, I mean, if that game would assume that a role player is new to role playing games, I don't think that's your target audience.
Perhaps not.
I don't think so. I think, take Dungeons and Dragons again, for example. I think if they would think that, okay, let's sell this to five people who are completely new to this, not even the Dungeon Master has ever played an RPG. I mean, the amount of information that would need to go into that would discourage people from even picking up the game. So I think that those kind of games sort of assume that you're being taught how to role play and how to play a role playing game by people in the group who have done it before you.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it's always been done. And I think that's the way it's, and I think that's why I really prefer, you know, to have beginner games for people who are new to RPGs that they can pick up. And then you can have a rather short version. And it's also a thing, I think that's why many games nowadays often include a mini adventure in the back.
Yeah.
Because then you have a perfect opportunity to tell the game master and the players, like, okay, this is how we envision that the game is played.
Yeah.
Because it's a perfect way to show that.
Yeah, because like a lot of my criticism comes from sort of board game world, and like, I mean, board game rule books are very clear. You play the game in this way, because otherwise you're just like moving bits of cardboard around and guessing and like scoring out a point every now and again for some reason. But yeah, with RPGs, we don't have that as much. And I think it's just kind of historical because RPGs have always contained that, you know, what is an RPG segment in mm-hmm. a book, mm-hmm. which has been historically ignored by pretty much everyone.
Yeah, because everyone who picked it up already played it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't
or played
mean,
a paid game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think one
that's why actually an upcoming RPG from Nordic Skulls actually has that title. What is an RPG? Followed by one sentence. If you've never played an RPG before, this game is not for you.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's very honest.
Full stop and then new chapter.
And that's one way to go about it. It's very honest, at least. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I would like to see that, like sort of more in RPGs. But for yourself, Mika, do you think the RPGs should like contain that sort of guidance in them? Or is it more cultural?
Well, it is good that it has a guideline overall, but it still comes down to the group very much. What kind of sort of expectations you have as a group, both as players, and what you as a DM have envisioned. Like, what are your plans for your session and what your adventure? Mm. Because I think it's important that everyone is on the same track once starting the game. Really, as simple as that. Typical me to just dumb it down.
Yeah.
But when it comes to just the layout of the game, I think, as Andreas is saying, that it's good to have some sort of measurement of this is what it is like. This is sort of what the game is going to be.
Yeah. Mm. So I'd like to move on a little bit because like it occurred to me sort of a couple of years ago that a lot of what we see as RPG reviews are from the GM's perspective, like because they're the core person in the group who's going to buy books, who's going to read through them, who's going to run them for the table. Obviously, like with board game reviews and card game reviews, you're basically just a player at the table. And what do you think about like reviewing RPGs from the player's perspective, how that game feels to play as opposed to run? I've written a couple of myself. I don't know if anyone else does that kind of work. Mm. It's really interesting to me that we don't kind of talk about that perspective.
I think it's because for me, it's been around since, like early 90s. Back then, there were, you know, players' handbooks and different kinds of supplements like that. And everyone around the table, maybe not everyone, but there was a scale, you know, going from the GM down to the player who just show up to the sessions, nothing else. And then you have like, you know, a scale there where some people bought these player handbooks and did a lot of character development and did a lot of that kind of stuff. In my opinion, nowadays, the GM is the one who buys all the books and does all the reading. Mm-hmm. And a much larger majority of players nowadays just show up and talks to the GM and says, okay, how do I make a character for this? Help me make a character for this.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. I don't know if you agree with me.
Much more important because your role as DM, the way you see the game and how you introduce it to a player who has no idea of what books you have read or any, you know, knowledge that you already possess, they will have their entire experience through you. They have not. That's why the DM on conventions like this, they are so important to make a good impression of the game, but because that is the experience the player will have. Like, it was a fun game. Was it because it was a fun game, or was it because it was a fun DM? You don't really know.
Yeah,
you would have to buy the game.
I've had a conversation with a few people who are really into like BRP and the original and sort of like original Call of Cthulhu. I haven't played Call of Cthulhu much. Mm. I know nothing against it, but a lot of people that really, really like that system have this thing where they're like, they defend the system a lot. And then it's like, oh, but only the GMRs. And it's like, those two things are not the same. You can't defend it and then like, and have that. So yeah, like that's sort of like, yeah, you're like the GM is the first sort of like portal to those games. For other panelists, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that then it becomes almost a collaborative review because it actually it puts together the thoughts of the GM, if that is the reviewer, for example, and then the players. And I like that. And then I feel like, again, you need to point out, how did you run this? I ran this game like this and this. I followed the rules, or I did it a bit more freeform.
Yeah.
And my players enjoyed this bit and maybe less so this other bit. And yeah. I love that. I love when you can get that aspect in.
Yeah.
And some of the best reviews, I feel like it's when there's almost two people talking and there's like one saying, I couldn't give you a good example about this. But when it's like, okay, so I ran this and I did that. And how did you think about it? Like almost like a conversation, like, yeah, well, as a player, I liked this bat and so on.
For yourself, ask, would you like to see more sort of more player focused reviews?
Yeah, absolutely. I like them too, I have to say. And but as was previously said, player reviews. The game depends heavily on the game master for the players. So yeah, they experience the game through the game master. So you always need to be a little careful when doing those. But there are good reasons for having player reviews, in my opinion. And some things like game mechanics, like fighting mechanics or something like that, they can definitely be seen from a player's point of view and be very objective in that point, yeah, as well. You know, basically, hey, it felt great because everyone got to do a lot in a combat round, yeah, for instance. Is something that is not in normal cases depending on the game master, but it's really dictated by the rule system in this way. And I think it is pretty cool to have those kind of reviews as well, because they actually look at the game from a different point of view, and a very important point of view, because player enjoyment is really what this is about, right? And as a game master, that's your goal. You want to make it really enjoyable or exciting, or or give them this horror feeling or whatever you want to do. Yeah. So I think from player reviews can actually reveal how this feels from the side of the players, and that is very important and part of the whole picture.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but I'd like to sort of like pose like one more question that just popped into my head because we were talking about tech reviews earlier. Obviously, technology is coming more and more into RPGs, and certainly during lockdown, everybody moved to one VTT or another, whether that be Roll20 or Foundry or whatever. And it very much sounds like the new edition of Dungeons & Dragons is going to be more digitally integrated when it comes out later in the year. Wizards are working on their own sort of virtual tabletop as well. How do you think we should like sort of talk about the sort of the digital aspect of games as that becomes more prevalent when it comes down to sort of reviews and like pitching the sort of accessibility of RPGs to people and how we get access to them and how that should come into sort of the reviewing and sort of criticism culture?
Well, I would love, as things change, I always love it if the people running the games are open to that change, because I feel like it's very easy to think like, oh yeah, now they're doing this thing technologically and they're doing this thing, and it all feels like gimmicks because they just want a new app, or they just want, instead of like what's actually practical. And that again ties together about like how do I run games? What do I want to enjoy from the games? But I would love to see reviewers then like, okay, so they added this new feature. We went all in on this and really tried this hard because this is the new change. Rather than like, okay, so they did a new feature. It seemed a bit like meh to get into. So we stuck to the one core of the game, or if you want to do the world or the feeling of the world, that's how you play, then sure. But I personally, I love the sort of embracing change and see like, okay, what are they actually trying to do with this, and how does that play out? Yeah.
Sure. I think it's a huge challenge for reviewers to basically see what's coming out now, what's coming next when it comes to technology, because you kind of need to, kind of like you said, you kind of need to look at it in an unbiased way, and that's difficult because as I said before, most reviewers are fans, not professional in any way. And as fans, you are deeply invested in what you love, right? And I catch myself doing that all the time. Like I've looked at D&D's new edition, for instance, that's gonna come, and I have to admit, I'm personally not a big fan, right?
Okay.
It's because I I like this human essence of sitting together in person and storytelling and stuff like that. And going all towards this digital environment is something that I feel a little, you know, negative about. I have to admit, you know, that's not my style. But that said, there are millions of people who love this, and it might open the doors to more people playing RPGs, and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, one of my friends has run some D&D for completely new people to role playing, and they're all much younger than us. Well, much younger than me, anyway, and. Their interaction with their character sheet and everything like that is through their phones. Yeah. They're completely invested in like D&D Beyond. That is how they interact with Dungeons and Dragons.
Absolutely. And so
they absolutely love it.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying, you know, reviewers need to make sure that they don't let themselves be guided by their own, you know, feelings too much when it comes to these new changes that are coming, that are definitely coming.
Yeah.
And also, you know, see the opportunities, because the target groups change as well. Yeah. New generations almost expect this digital component, and a lot of things make gaming easier for them, like the automated calculation of, you know, points and stuff like that. And so it's going to be, I mean, the reviewers are in a difficult position, I would say, because of these changes. But if they see the opportunities, and if they understand the new target groups, that could be a great thing.
For yourself, Andreas, how do you feel about sort of digital integration?
Well, great for those who love it.
Fair enough. For yourself, Mikael?
It's fun to see, because in such short time, in just the latest 5 years, there was no such thing. Before COVID, it was it hadn't really been produced much. There was Roll20, but it was in a very early state, and it was clunky as hell. But now it's 5 years later, it has progressed so much, and there are people, the big companies like Wizards of the Coast, but also indie companies creating different kinds of foundry, like VTTs, but there are Kickstarter campaigns for different kinds of things all of the time.
Yeah.
And it's very fun to see how much it's like developing in such a short time. And I think it's just the start. We have a lot to see still in the digital RPG playing era.
Cool. We're just about out of time. So any questions from anyone, from anything the panel wants to mention, or anything, questions from the audience that's here before we wrap up?
I do have a question for you.
Sure.
But there was an audience question first.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have just a comment.
Yeah, sure.
I got back into RPGs thanks to VTTs.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah.
And should we say, repeat that for the...
Yeah, so sorry, as Jamal was saying there, that he got back into sort of role-playing games through the use of VTTs and technology, so it's been a good accessibility thing. That's great.
Yeah. We started our podcast with one player in Japan and two of us in London, so we wouldn't have been able to do it if we didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Sorry, you're...
So, my question, because you do reviews, so my question is, what drives you to do that? What is your inspiration for that and your motivation for that?
I mean, mostly why I sort of started, pitched this panel as well. I think the state of RPG criticism, certainly in the UK, is not great, basically, and I wanted to, like, bring a more sort of critical aspect to it, so, like, look at it with a more critical eye, and I've started doing, like, GM reviews and player reviews for the games that I get a chance to do both in. I've done... like a player review for Vassim, which I have not run, but I've played a few sessions of it. So I wrote a review from like, how does that feel to play? What are the levers there to pull? And like, how's it feel? So yeah, just to try and do a little bit more sort of like proper criticism's the wrong word, but just give it a little bit more critical sort of like nuance to it. Yeah. But so yeah, that was the motivation, is to just sort of bring a bit more of my critical eye to sort of something that I really love doing and like love to advocate for, want to bring more people into. Great. Well, I think that's all we have time for. Thanks very much to the panelists. Thank you very much to our audience.
Thank you.
Bye-bye for having us. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.